Good afternoon. How many of you ever helped a plant garden? Anybody? All right, so you know what it's like. You go out there and you till the garden, and then you take the hoe and you make all the little rows, and you plant the seeds and you keep them so far apart, cover them all back up again, right? That's called planting garden. How many ever planted, sowed lawn? Anybody? All right. What did you do different? You take the hoe out there and make little rows and plant each little seed?
You spread the seed.
All right. So if you hadn't already discovered, I don't teach like planting a garden. Nice little rows, everything, nice little box. There's different ways to teach. I prefer to spread the seed, all right? And hopefully some of it lands where it's supposed to go and brings forth some fruit in the future. So if you were anticipating a nice little garden of thought, it's not going to happen. So hopefully you can glean some things as we go along here. So I want to finish yesterday, and I have to maybe cut out a few stories so that we can cover some things. So yesterday we were looking at David and Mephibosheth, and we had Ziba coming into this picture, making this triangle of difficulty in a friendship. And if you've been on planet Earth long enough, you suddenly discover that that's probably not too far out of the realm of things that happen in our friendships in life, where we have this extra third party coming in there making a little problem. All right? Somewhere we have to know what we're going to do with that. And I tried to emphasize that David did not let that destroy his commitment to his friend Jonathan that he was fulfilling through Mephibosheth. And one thing I wanted to emphasize, one thing that David did, and I want you to remember this, sometimes you will be friends with somebody who has a difficulty in their life. Allow that individual to maintain their dignity of who they are. All right? It's important to do that. Sometimes individuals have difficulties. Let them maintain their dignity. Nowhere do we see David emphasizing the fact that you're handicapped, Mephibosheth. Did you know that? You ought to really thank me for being a nice guy to you. No, that's not friendship. Friendship is going to honor another person, allow them to maintain their dignity. And you're actually going to not focus on whatever difficulty they might have. So let's keep that in mind. Now, I just want to go a little further into this. Let's recap a little bit from yesterday. God set the solitary into what? Someone? Families. For what purpose? Oh, wow. I thought I made a point yesterday. I must not. All right, we're going to dig a hole and plant a seed here. God set the solitary in families that we might learn community, right? How to function as a community. So then when you move out of that home, you're going to start another family and you're going to teach those children to be community. And community comes into society to bless community. All right? God's designed for meeting the social needs of mankind in a Christian way. All right. So God took the solitary, He set them in families. Families are to learn community. Are you learning community in your family? If you're not, well, go back to the drawing board and figure out how to be community in your family, because that's important, all right? You will not make a contribution to society until you have learned to function within a family unit, all right? The problem in our world today is that we have way too many people who had never learned how to function in a family unit, so therefore, they're in society trying to figure out how to do it there, and it's not working out too good. And so we have a decline in our society today, all because of that. I shouldn't say all because of that. At least that's part of it. Unfortunately, it hasn't stayed out there in society. It has moved right in among people who call themselves Christian, all right? A lot of broken homes, a lot of messed up families. God wants us to
learn to build community. All right, so the second thing that I tried to emphasize to you was that friendships can be what? Messy. Thank you. Friendships can be messy. So if you want to develop a friendship, you're going to go into it knowing that, you know what, this might not just be all gravy. What is the difference between Christian friendship and the friendship that the world offers you?
We're still friends after the relationship stops benefiting.
All right. You're still friends after the relationship ceases to benefit you. Thank you. In other words, we're not into it for what I can get out of it. I'm into it for what I can give. All right? Very important to remember that. Otherwise, you're no different than the world, even though you might profess to be a Christian. All right. What do you do when a friendship becomes toxic? Do you know what I mean by the word toxic? You ever been in a toxic friendship? How many of you have ever been in a toxic friendship? Okay. So some of you know what I'm talking about. So for those that have never been there, can somebody explain what that toxic relationship was like just briefly? Don't give me all the details in one moment. Go ahead. Okay. They tend to poison you. You go away feeling like, oh, I'm sick in the stomach. Wow. That person just depresses me. Why am I even around this person? What other things creates toxic friendships?
Control.
Control? How's that done? I'm not sure who gave the answer. Did you give the answer?
Yes.
Okay. So how does somebody control you in a friendship? Okay. All right. It's my way or the highway, is that what they say? Okay. You feel like you're being pushed into something. Manipulating. All right. Anything else that describes toxic relationship? I have one more. All very good.
Pride?
That's usually at the very core of it. Yep. Self-centered? Immorality? Their own pain. That's pretty important. In other words, they dump on you all the time. Just, it's like, boy, don't you ever get done? One more that I want to emphasize to you. A friendship is toxic when you have to constantly choose between your parents' values and your friends' values. I want to repeat that. You are in a toxic relationship when you have to constantly choose between your parents' values and your friends' values. Now, we said earlier that friendship is about commitment. So if friendship is about commitment, when am I doing wrong by what do I do with this toxic relationship? Let's have some discussion, all right? World cuts it off. Okay? So what's the Christian say? Dad, mom says, I don't want you to run around with Micah anymore. I guess you're a good guy. We're going to assume that. Hopefully after you leave, here you are. What are you going to do? You go to church with Micah. And your parents are saying, Micah's a bad guy. That puts you in a bad situation sometimes. And this, I'm trying to make this real for you because it's very real, all right? Because in any church in any church group, you're going to have some diversity of what parents allow and don't allow. In every church group, you're going to have parents that are very strong, and you're going to have some parents that are very, very weak. It's like they're non-existent parents, and you wonder, how did this ever happen? And I could get into some of that. Maybe I will a little later, but so how do we deal with these toxic relationships? And I think this is reality. We've got to do something about it. So my daughter called me the other a little while back, she was out with her friends one Sunday afternoon, friends and family, their family. And as a family, we don't go out to eat on Sundays, all right? We just don't do that, all right? Now, there's probably a variation in this group of who does and who doesn't and where you draw all those lines, and I'm not here to debate that, but our family, we don't go out to eat on Sunday. It's not, we just don't do that. She texts me and she says, "Dad, what am I to do? We're you know, out of town and they're going to stop to eat. What are you going to do?" And I felt like, wow. You know, sometimes it's not fun to be a dad. It's just not fun to be a dad. Thanks, Brian. Thank you. Now the decision was on me. Because am I going to tell my daughter, okay, you're going to wait until you get home at 10, 11 o'clock at night till you get something to eat? Am I going to say, do as the Romans do when you're with the Romans? What am I going to do? And you're all wondering what I did, right? That's what I did. I said, look, do as the Romans do. You learn a lesson. From now on, you know, if you're going to go somewhere on a Sunday with this family, you're just going to automatically know that We're not going to be going over mealtime because that's not what we do, okay? We're not going to make a scene out of this. We're not going to try to destroy friendships through this. And I'm hoping that my daughter at least understood. I appreciated she asking and saying, "Dad, what do I do?" Okay, that meant a lot to me. Tough situations. What do you do with situations like that, okay? And sometimes you don't have the opportunity to call Dad and say, and make him the at the brunt of it all. So, here's what I want you to remember. We all process life differently. We're all made up of different personalities and ability to handle problems. Some people, you can dump on them all day long and it's they're okay with that. And the next person goes to pieces. That doesn't make the person who goes to pieces wrong. It's just you're not made to handle that kind of stuff, all right? And I will say this. There's a place where you have to learn to develop the ability that whatever comes in this ear, that's why God gave you two ears, you let it go out that way, okay? I had a friend years ago that he lost his wife, and he called me every day. And he would go on for hours. Poor guy was just plain lonely. Didn't know any other friends, nobody else to talk to. And he says, "I guess you get tired of me calling." I said, "You know what, Eugene?" I said, "God gave me two ears. You wouldn't believe the pal I have here beside me." Anyway, you've got to learn to develop that. You know what? You're listening. It's not that you're not interacting, that you don't care. I can't change your situation in life, and you can't change my situation in life. Most people just need somebody to unload to. All right? The thing that you have to realize is they're not asking for you to solve their problem. They just want somebody to hear, because when you verbalize something, it gets it out of the system. All right? Learn to be that kind of friend. You know what? I'm listening. What do you want to tell me? I can't change your situation. Hey, if you want me to help you cry, I can do that. Maybe. Depending on how bad you can make this thing sound. But I can't change your situation, all right? Always remember that. If you wanted to be a compassionate person, a listening person, you're going to have to learn what to do with the stuff that comes in. And the best thing to do with it is take it to the Lord in prayer. Or if you got a trash can, you just put it in, put the lid on. Don't worry about it. Too many times people take that information and they can't handle themselves, so they go to somebody else and say, "Oh, Billy said so and so, and I don't know what to do about it." And after a while, it gets to be a big deal when it was never intended to be a big deal. All right? And in doing that, you actually hurt people, because they dumped on you
assuming that you were a confidant. Somebody I could trust to dump on, and it was okay. All right? You have to know what you can handle. If you can't handle, then you're going to have to say, you know what? I can't handle that. Be honest with your friend and say, I'm just not made for that. Maybe you should find somebody that has a stronger framework than I have. All right? Be open, be kind about that. I'm going to say this in toxic relationships. It's important to put distance between yourself and that person. But be kind about it. All right? You don't need two people in the ditch. You know, just because somebody's got a problem, if you can't handle their stress along with your own problems in life, put some distance there. It's okay. It's not wrong. You're not going against a commitment to be a friend by putting some distance there. All right? If the person says, why are you pushing me off? Be honest with them. Look, I can't handle it. I can't handle it. I'm just not made that way. All right? Now, somebody mentioned a thing about, did somebody mention about being put on a guilt trip? Did you ever have somebody put you on a guilt trip? Is that painful? It's like, and you're trying to sort out. So, if you were to go to some heathen nation, who is the most powerful person in a heathen culture? Somebody know? The witch doctor. Thank you. Why? They go to him to find cures? That's right. But how does that make you powerful? Not everybody's sick. Rebellion is as the sin of what? Witchcraft. Oh, hold it here. Get into Ephesians and it tells us that the works of the flesh is the works of witchcraft. Any witches here? What's he talking about? So if the witch doctor is the most powerful person within a heathen culture, there's a reason for that. Because they'll place a curse on you. All right? If they place a curse on you, they can put fear into your life and they control you through fear. Fear produces guilt. Pretty powerful stuff. All right? So when it talks about the works of darkness and the works of the flesh, and he's talking about witchcraft, he's not talking about the Ouija boards and all that goofy stuff. He's talking about individuals who try to dominate you, who try to put power on you to produce guilt in your life. That's the works of witchcraft, all right, as I understand it. Friends that make you feel guilty are producing a toxic relationship, and you need to put distance between you and them. Now, I want to clarify something here. Before you start to say, man, you just hit it on the nail. That's my dad. You just hit it on, that's my mom. My mom's always putting me on a guilt trip, and I'm so sick and tired of it. Whoa, 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 whoa. Your mom may put you on a guilt trip. She has that privilege. She has that right. When I go to this book, it says, mom can put you on a guilt trip, and she can do it all day long. All right? And dad can put you on a guilt trip all day long. What's my proof?
Oh. Children obey your parents.
Children obey your parents. Let's go back a little further than that. Honor thy father and mother because with promise. Thank you. Honor thy father and thy mother, for it is the first commandment with promise. And that promise is what?
Long life.
All right? Dad and mom can put you on a guilt trip. They have that right. If you forget everything else I said this week, I want you to remember the importance of honoring your father and mother.
Honoring your father and mother is accepting dad and mom as a gift from God. And you say, well, that's the worst gift God could have ever given me. Excuse me. Would you like to be fatherless or motherless? Yeah, they might be tough. And maybe some parents are abusive. I realize that. But I want you to understand that God gave you that gift. Don't neglect it, all right? One man said to my brother, he was a foster boy, and then I guess he eventually got adopted. Got married, he's in Mennonite home community. Said my brother one Sunday morning, he was 60-some years old. He said, I just don't understand why my mom didn't want me when I was born. He's 60-some years old. Grown man. He's got a family. He done well financially in life. Had some health issues. And he's trying to figure out why his mom did not want him when he was born. Do you want to be fatherless? Do you want to be motherless? Do you want to be trying to answer those kind of questions when you're 60 years old? What would you tell somebody like that? My brother said to me, he said, you know what, Raymond? He says, I don't know why your mom didn't want you. But I can tell you what I do know. I would never have known you as a friend if that wouldn't have happened. You say, well, that was a dumb answer. The next Sunday, Raymond met my brother and he says, thank you. He says, you don't know what that meant to me. He said, that meant the world to me. You know why? Let's focus on what we know and not on what we don't know. The endless questions of things that we don't know, lay it aside. What do you know? You can bless somebody by helping them to learn to focus on what you do know, all right? You know, my brother could have sat there and he could have churned through all kinds of scenarios of why his mother didn't want him. And it would have amounted to absolutely nothing. Let's focus on what we know, all right? Honor thy father and thy mother. All right? I'm going to give you another one. I don't know if anybody here is adopted or not. Doesn't matter. In God's sight, you're as precious in His sight as those that aren't. So, Ken's educational joys. Ken was adopted, and Ken and I used to go to the trade shows together years ago. And I said, well, Ken, tell me something. He said, you're adopted. So all these people had these issues with being adopted. I said, can you explain it to me? I want to get your perspective because, you know, people have all these problems. He says, well, he says, it's like this. He said, I know where my mom is. But he says, I've always been afraid to go look it up for fear of what I would find. He says, I watched the obituary every day or whatever, just to see if she passed. But he said, no, I don't really have an interest in going there. He said, I went to my dad one day, and he said, he was younger. He said, I was complaining about, I guess just saying he didn't feel like he belonged or whatever. And he said, you know what Dad told me? He said, Ken, now somebody told me later this wasn't true. He said, your brother John, I don't think he had a brother, I don't remember his name exactly. He said, we had to take whatever God gave us, but he said, we chose you. He says, you know, that meant a lot to me. If you're adopted here today, and I don't know if you have anybody else, but I just want to say this. Somebody chose you, okay? If you're not adopted, well, you know what? My dad and mom had to take whatever they got. I don't know how many times they went, Lord, what did you do this to us for? I'm sure there's plenty. Just remember this. God has a plan for your life. And God wants you to bless other people, all right? And Ken has blessed a lot of people in his lifetime. Now, why did I go there? I went there because Dad and Mom have the right to put you on a guilt trip. I'm going to pick on you ladies because I have six daughters. No, I don't have six daughters. I have four daughters. I'm getting to be an old man here. Four daughters, two sons. So I know a little bit about how this stuff works. So Mom's trying to give you a perspective of life. She's trying to give you some direction as to sometime you're going to grow up. She'll grow up. I'm already growing up. So my 30-year-old daughter, 34-year-old daughter told me just recently, she said, yeah, you know, at 19, she thought, I thought I was growing up. She says, I look back now, wow. You know, four children later in 19, she learned something. 19, you didn't even start growing up yet. Not to insult you all. I'm sure it's great to feel growing up, all right? I'm just saying, as life goes on, you're going to discover that, you know what, at 19, yeah, it feels like I'm growing up, but there's a lot of things to learn from here on out. You haven't learned it all. Mom has been there a little longer than you, and she's trying to give you a framework of life, and you don't need to fight Mom. Yeah, but when I say this, she says that. You don't need to argue with Mom, okay? Got that? When Mom says, this is the way it is, shut up. Got that? I'll tell you why. If you ever move out of home and you get married, your marriage is going to work best if somebody learns to keep their mouth shut first. So it doesn't have to be me. It's going to be him. Oh, really? Well, it works better if you take turns. All right. So you have to learn in life there's a time to speak, there's a time to be quiet. You say, well, Mom is the adult. She is the one that should be initiating all this. I want to say this. You are still the child. You are responsible to take the initiative, to take Mom's direction, and shut up, if I can use that terminology. Just be quiet. All right? She says, this is the way we're going to do it. You don't have to argue for 10 minutes and say, why can't we do it this way, blah, blah, blah. Just do it. All right? Do it. And someday when you're doing your own thing, then you can do it your way and you might discover, you know what? That didn't work too good. All right? Young men, Dad's trying to get some common sense into your head. You know, I always thought children came with common sense. Boy, did I ever learn something different. I ain't got nothing. And you got to train them. All right, I'm not trying to insult you fellas. But it's a reality. Once you become a parent, you start to realize that the things that you assumed people have, they don't have. And you have to somehow write the script. All right? Common sense. Dad's trying to make you stop and think about what you're going to do. So I one day I decided my friend had a car, a Buick Regal. Boy, you fellas, this is way back. I thought it was a pretty cool car. And I decided I was going to sell my car and get this car. I drove it home, parked it in the garage. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. Next day, you're not doing that. Whether you got the money to do it or not is beside the point. You're not doing that. Okay. What was Dad trying to teach me? There was nothing wrong with my other car. Absolutely nothing wrong with my other car. You know how much money you can waste buying cars unless you're a shrewd dealer? You can waste a lot of money. My son recently told me, he said, yeah, Dad, he said, I think he just turned 26. From the time he was 17 or 16 to 26, he had 22 different cars. Now, let me tell you, these were not $700 cars. Okay, some of them. They were, he said, I would have been so much better off going out and borrowing money and buying a car and making payments than all that trash I dealt with. Well, I didn't get into the discussion. I'm like, maybe you should have just bought something and been happy with it rather than seeing something else and trading off all the time.
Okay, back to the point. Dad may put you on a guilt trip. Dad put me on a guilt trip when that car was sitting out there in the garage that I wanted. And I wasn't happy about it, okay? And I love my dad today. And I thank God for my dad today. I was pretty dumb back then. Still am pretty dumb. But your dad may put you on a guilt trip. God's okay with that. God is not going to condemn you for that. Your friend may not put you on a guilt trip, all right? Can you make that difference? Do you understand that difference? I hope you do. So some other things I want to tell you young folks. This isn't really dealing with friendship, but I'm just going to, I don't know when you tell people this stuff. Young people, if you're going someplace some evening, let your parents know where you're going and when you're going to be home. It's none of their business, right? How about it, young guys? Is it any of their business where you're going and what time you're going to be home? Some of you are shaking your heads, yes. So when I was young, I was like, why? I'm okay out there. I know what I'm doing. Now that I'm an old man, so I drive truck, and the best time to drive truck is early in the morning from 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning is when you want to get up and get out there and make it happen, okay? If you're not out there making it happen by 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, you're going to have a miserable day. Well, guess what that means about bedtime? That means you better be in bed by 9 o'clock. So you go to bed at 9 o'clock Sunday evening, and you keep getting awake. Did he get home? Did she get home? And you didn't hear the garage door go. It's like, oh, you're back to sleep again. And you're waking up. Did she get home? Did he get home? Oh. I want to tell you something. That's stressful. It's easier to look at the clock and say, you know what? They said they're going to be home at 11 o'clock. It's only 10:30. Okay, so if it's going to be 11 o'clock. It's called honor thy father and thy mother. Okay? They're not trying to make life miserable for you. They care about you. And the natural instinct inside of our hearts as a parent is, where are the children? I can't really sleep well until they are home. All right? That's important for us to remember that. If you're living with somebody else, it's only respectful to say, hey, I'm going to be gone and I'm going to be back at a certain time. That's respect. All right? The sooner you learn that in life, the more prepared you are to be growing up. So much fun. All right? Some basics in life. Now, back to this thing of toxic relationships. Sometime this week, I am going to have something on finding a life companion. I don't know why in the world, in our society today, people aren't getting married. It's weird. It's totally weird. Back in my day, people couldn't wait to get married, and now today they don't want to get married. Explain that one to me. But anyway, we'll get into that probably Thursday. So here's something you have to understand about male and female. So somebody wrote a book entitled, Women Are Like Spaghetti, and Men Are Like Waffles. What's he talking about? Well, he was talking about the emotional makeup between difference between women and men. Now, don't get upset with me here. Spaghetti. Did you ever scoop in a bowl of spaghetti and you go higher and higher and higher, and finally you got it out of the bowl and now you're ready to put it on the plate? Why is that? Well, this stuff's stringy, right? And you look at it and you have all these loose ends. All right? So waffles, you know what waffles? You know, everybody know what a waffle is? Little square blocks, they're all connected together. That's the way we think, guys. All right? We think in little boxes. And we can connect our little boxes and we can put it all together in a nice little... All right? And if it don't fit in the box, we just... It doesn't matter. You know, we don't need to worry about it. Let me tell you something. These dear ladies over here,
It starts here and it... And we don't know where it's going to end up. So you look at that on your plate and you go, where is the beginning? Where is the end? I see all these loose ends, but nobody can tie them together. All right. Emotionally, that tends to be the way women process things. And let me tell you, men, something, young fellows, something. That's a good thing to have in your life, all right? It helps to keep us balanced. Otherwise, we're just cold, cut-and-dried people, all right? So it's good to have that kind of influence in our life. Back to the toxic relationships, because you tend to process life in that way, you're going to have to know how much of a toxic relationship you can handle, all right? That all these loose ends don't get tied into knots and you have a mess at the end of it. You've got to know how much you can handle. And you've got to say yes or no. I'm not going to go there, all right? So when I was at a wedding and John D. preached the message, and he said, this one man said, I am going to marry a lady who is not spaghetti. She is actually... She can think waffle form, all right? Everything's good. So he found this perfect lady. Everything's great and wonderful. They get married. And one day he comes home and she's sitting on the couch crying. And he's like, what's the matter? And so he does the waffle. Boom, boom, boom. Okay. Don't you get it? And she says, I know, but I just want to cry, okay? She was female enough to know that it's okay to cry, all right? I don't need to be a waffle. All right, so folks, keep that in mind. We're cut and dried people. We figure it out. We can probably handle more toxic relationships than not. These ladies over here probably can. If you guys ever get married and you come home and your wife's all in a tizzy because she got a phone call from some friend that was pre the marital relationship, just understand that that's what she's trying. She's trying to get all the skedians all together. All right. And your job is to say, you know what? It doesn't matter. Just let it go. It'll take care of itself. Don't worry about it. All right. That's going to be your job. All right, toxic relationships. Don't let friends put you on guilt trips. Just don't do that. Because they're trying to dominate you, they're trying to control you, they're trying to make you their servant. It's not a friendship if you're in bondage to it. If you can't walk away from it, you've got a problem. I want to clarify this. The same thing is true in courtship. After marriage, different rules. All right. I'm so sick and tired of these bad marriages that are toxic. And they don't have to be that way. The reason they're that way is because somebody didn't do their homework before they got married. All right. And that's what I'm going to tell you about on Thursday. How to do your homework. All right, now we're going to get into what I was going to have for today. How about that? Enjoy your differences. Can somebody tell me what is the difference between a discussion and an argument? Raised voices? Yeah, that can get pretty loud. Anything else? Good thought. It's okay. Back here. Anger? Thank you. You say, not respecting? Okay, whether or not we're respecting each other's views, all right? Does it have a point to it? Okay. Well, let me give you a simple one. A discussion is the discovery of what is right and wrong. An argument is to discover who is right or wrong. All right? I'm going to repeat that. A discussion is discovering what is right and wrong.
And an argument is trying to discover who is right or wrong. Now, here's what I want to say, that when you are in a friendship and you're having a discussion, if you start to discover that this thing, that I'm trying to prove that I am right, I have just moved from a discussion to an argument. You don't have to have arguments. You really don't have to. So I want you to stop and think about that. The next time you're with one of your friends and you start a discussion and this thing starts to get a little heated, a little angry, and we start to have raised voices and all the things that go into that. It's kind of like telltale marks that something's maybe not quite right here. Stop and say, do I have to prove that I'm right? Probably not. Most of the time, we don't have to prove that we're right. And a good discussion is the ability to get somebody else's perspective on something. It can actually be enjoyable. But does that mean that I'm going to be tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine and I'm going to be like the last person I talk to? We meet people like that. You talk to them and they're like the last person they talk to or the last book that they read. When the Bible says, be fully persuaded in your own mind, all right? But that doesn't mean that I have to make Samuel fully persuaded in my mind. No, he's got a mind of his own. Let him have his own mind. But he has to somehow figure out if he's fully persuaded in his own mind, okay? And the way we become fully persuaded in our own mind sometimes is through the power of discussion. What is right and what is wrong, all right? So let's remember that. If we're going to enjoy our differences in life, somewhere we have to be focused on what is right and wrong and rather than who is right and wrong. So there was a church started out in Houston, Texas. And they started this church right between the black slum and a white health community. So now we have a pretty good contrast. And they started this church based on the fact that they were going to have a balance of black people and a balance of white health community, which is probably, we're going to say, middle and upper class. All right? Slums, middle upper class. And so the leadership group there was made up of a balance between those two. I don't know how many of you are familiar with evangelism in other countries. So churches send people to start a mission somewhere in another country. What do you think happens? Somebody?
They're obviously different.
They're different? What happens when well I'll just tell you what happens. Too many times what happens is, so you have these American people coming into this other country, and you have the people, the natives from the country. So you have the natives and you have the Americans. And these Americans tend to cluster and the natives tend to cluster. How's that work? So inside of each one of us is a natural desire to be with other people that we are familiar with and that we can just connect with easily. All right. That's a problem, folks. That's a big problem when you go out to do evangelism. If you cannot intermingle with the people that you're witnessing to, you're going to have a problem. Now, they had a problem with Jesus, didn't they? Why? He ate with publicans and sinners. How could he do something like that? He was intermingling. Not allowed. No. Jesus understood that if you're going to make a difference in somebody's life, you're going to have to learn how to intermingle. The differences in your lives, somewhere you're going to have to put them together. You're going to have to allow them to come together in a way that can be positive to each person. All right? Man, that clock keeps moving. All right, so I'm going to use an illustration up here. I'll go ahead and jump ahead to that. I wanted to go to 1 Corinthians. The need to be connected. All right? There is a need to be connected, which means that somebody has to do the connecting. So we have, how many dots are connected over here on the right-hand side? 8. But there's a total of how many dots?
9.
Did you ever feel like the person in the middle? Unconnected? What is one thing that everybody desires? Connection? Belonging? Thank you. Let me tell you, churches, people come to churches because they want to belong to something. And I might be of the reasons. The most powerful reason they want to be a part of a church is they want to belong to something. All right? Forget that one. Okay. How are we going to get the guy in the middle connected? Can somebody go up there? And I have 9 more dots over here. I would go up there and with 4 lines connect all the dots. Need a volunteer to go up and do that. Okay? You can do that? Thank you. You've done this before, hopefully? All right. Let's see if you remember. I did that one time before, and I got there, and I forgot how to do it. Embarrassed myself in front of the congregation. So watch this. Thank you. What happened? Can somebody tell me what just happened there? He went outside the box. Thank you. So we tend to look at that and say, thank you very much. We tend to think inside boxes. And if you don't fit in my box, I can't connect with you. I want to say to every person here, I don't know how many different churches are represented here. Every person here can make a difference in the congregation that you are in. And you say, well, my congregation, the preachers are just plain boo. And they've got so many rules and regulations that there is no way these poor people can be connected. I want to tell you something. You can make a difference. It doesn't matter all that other stuff. What matters is, are you willing to go outside of your box to connect to that person that's in the middle? Are you willing? Not is somebody else willing, are the preachers willing, is the rest of the church willing? Are you willing to make that sacrifice, to make that connection to other people, and especially those who don't feel like they belong? All right? I'm giving you a job when you get back home. It's your job to make people feel like they belong. All right? You don't have to. It's not that tough. It really isn't. What you have to do is think outside the box. All right? Now, that doesn't mean you're going to run off to some other church because that's outside the box. There's lots of churches outside the box, let me tell you. If you can't do it in the box, if you can't think outside of the box, in the box, you're not going to do it anywhere else. So you might as well do it at your home church, all right? Do it right there. Figure out how to connect to other people. And I want to tell you that in every church there is somebody who feels lonely, who feels disconnected. God is calling you and I as believers to be the connecting link for that person to Jesus Christ. All right? The reason that person in the middle feels disconnected is probably they're doing something goofy. They're not fitting into the mold. That might be true. That might be true. But that is no reason to say you don't belong, all right? Figure out how to connect. Figure out how to make that person feel welcomed. And if they are being goofy, you don't have to tell them, you know what? The reason you don't fit is because you're being goofy. I remember a preacher telling me one time, he says, you need to be on the inner circle. What? I didn't know there was an inner circle. But anyway, there was apparently at that church. And I wasn't in the inner circle, and so I was in bad shape. Well, I had a lot of things to learn in life after that. The answer to life is learning to think outside of the box and helping people to connect to Jesus Christ through you. All right? I'm going to wrap it up with that. And I didn't get very far on enjoying our differences, and we'll get into more of that tomorrow. And I want to also look at
friends forgive friends, all right? And maybe we'll get started on that. So God bless each of you. And I want you to remember that you got a dear dad and mom at home. And that you pray for them while you're here at Bible school.
Thank you for listening to this message. We trust that it has been a blessing to you. If you would like additional sermons or a catalog, please visit our website at effortofministries.org. Call us toll-free at 855-557-7902 or write to us at Ephrata Ministries, 400 West Main Street, Suite 1, Ephrata, Pennsylvania, 17522. You are welcome to copy this message for free distribution. This ministry is supported by your donations. May the Lord Jesus bless you.